Well, good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works and to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns has aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a dialogue that we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We're your hosts, Ron Beard and Liz Graves, and we hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. And a reminder that we are recording this show in advance and won't be taking any calls today. This afternoon, our topic is artificial intelligence, and I'm going to let Liz do the introductions.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Well, some listeners may remember that last summer we had a show on artificial intelligence in our lives and got excited about several follow-up panels. So this is one we're focusing today on schools. It's annual report season for towns and schools. And MDI High School principal Matt Haney said in his annual report and at the annual budget meeting that technology in the classroom, including how to use artificial intelligence tools effectively and ethically, has been a major focus of professional development this year at that school. So we gathered several members of the team that has been working to stay ahead of the curve on AI in schools to hear about how they're thinking together about opportunities and challenges with these powerful new tools. So with us today are Kate Meyer, who is an English and design thinking teacher at MDI High School. She was also 2020 Hancock County Teacher of the Year, which we're very proud. Nicole Davis, who's over at the Department of Education, has been involved in this work. She is an AI and emerging technology specialist with them. And our friend Greg Cox is back. He's a professor of philosophy at College of the Atlantic, and he's the author of a book on this topic, Smarter Planet or Wiser Earth, Dialogue and Collaboration in the Era of Artificial Intelligence. So welcome, everybody. Because I feared that this topic would get technical and wonky quickly, we always ask guests to introduce themselves and where they grew up and how they came to the work that they're doing. And we thought it might be fun today, in addition to that, how you came to do what you're doing, if you could reach back into your own memory of your own student days and what was something in school for you that worked well and something that did not work well about school for you. So maybe we'll start with Kate if we can.
I'll start with my K-12 experience. So I have always just been a student and I've always really loved learning. So a lot of what happened in my K-12 education really did work for me. I played school as a child because I was so excited about school. And then when school happened, I was just really excited to be there. And that definitely influenced, the role that I have taken on as an adult as well. So really a lot of things worked for me in school because that's what I found really fun and engaging. When I think back, I think I could have had a much stronger experience. Had we been talking about student choice and voice and differentiation at that time. But I graduated high school in 1996. And so that was not on the radar at all at that time. So had that been in place, I think I could have had an even better experience in school. I've lived all over the country. I ended up in Maine when I was a freshman in high school, and I just stayed here as my family continued to move around the country. I went to school at University of Maine at Farmington. I've been an English teacher for 25 years now. I've taught design thinking as well for about 10 years. Right after COVID, where we did our hybrid year, I took a 2-year position with the Department of Education here in Maine as a distinguished educator. And that role was as an MLTI ambassador. And so the state was rebooting its MLTI program. They wanted to create a lot more professional development for educators around technology. And I ended up being one of the first 5 MLTI ambassadors for the state. And so I got to travel the state and work with educators on technology integration and digital citizenship, which were things that I've been doing in my classroom since the MLTI program started about 22 years ago.
So help us out. What is MLTI?
The Maine Learning Technology Initiative.
Thank you.
Yes. And so I got 2 years to really dive in to technology, to work with educators, to deliver a lot of professional development, and AI came on the scene during my time there. So I had a full year where it was my job to learn everything that I could about AI, and then to start talking with educators about it. And then Nicole came on and we started to overlap in that position.
Maybe we'll go to you next, Nicole. How did you come to do what you're doing, and what do you remember about school for yourself?
Sounds good. So, school wise, I loved school, and I also struggled in school. So, I had a lot of really good teachers that made that connection, or they did quirky things, and that's what really helped me. And I think that's what led me to teaching in the long run. And I loved having that class that just maybe struggled a little bit, and I could do those quirky things and get them to the point where they were excited about learning. I have taught for about 20 years, mostly in middle school, but done a variety of things at different levels, mostly math and science. I've lived in Maine or North Carolina most of my life, currently in Damariscotta. And let's see, what else? How did I get to my job? So I went to Farmington, moved directly down to North Carolina right after I got out, and taught fifth grade for a number of years, and then came back to Maine because it was my home and I wanted to be here, and taught seventh grade. And then during the pandemic, I was one of the teachers that went completely remote. And I actually loved it, even though others did not. It was a new challenge and something exciting. And so when this job came along, or when the MLTI ambassadorship came along, which is what Kate was talking about, I looked at the position the first year I saw it, and I was like, well, that's too good to be true. And then the second year I applied for it and got it. And then Kate and I, our years overlapped. And like she said, we got to work on AI, and it's been exciting to just go all over the state and do professional development. And it's been fantastic to be able to have that connection with Kate, because we've worked together and formed different relationships there. So it's been exciting.
So Gray, remind us some of your long path.
K through 12 experiences, you know, I did a lot of learning on my own of various kinds of things, books and so on, sort of in the post-Sputnik period, that were How and Why Wonder books and all that kind of stuff came around. But I went to school here in Bar Harbor, and in the sixth grade, I had what was for me a pretty bad experience in math, because the teacher was just experimenting, trying to break out of traditional ways of teaching. And so she, for math, set up a program in which we were invited to get an A, B, C, or D, depending on how many chapters of the math book we worked through on our own. And she just sort of ignored math otherwise, I think partly because maybe she didn't have much in the way of chops on teaching it herself. And so I remember at the end of the first quarter, I think it was a Wednesday night before all the work was due on a Friday, staying up till very late with my mother, trying to finish enough chapters of the math book so I could get a passing grade. It was like, this is not the way, I think independent learning was great in many ways for me, but it had to be structured and kind of minimal support, you know. So a really great experience that I had was working with George Demas in the theater program at MDI High School. And, you know, he was just so respectful and really empowering to students. And so he would sort of gauge when they were ready to do something on their own, like develop an interpretation of a character, and how to provide support and to provide the kind of support that people needed, and feedback after a rehearsal or after a show, and finding ways to let them... like, for example, at one point he got me to sort of direct a small group within the My Fair Lady production. And it was just very empowering, you know, to have that kind of support, and really led me to understand just an enormous amount about how to interpret texts, how to work with other people, and so on. In terms of my own journey and with regard to AI stuff, as an undergraduate, had the opportunity to connect with College Atlantic actually the year before it was actually opened officially, it had an experimental summer program in how to use ideas of human ecology in undergraduate education. And I was a guinea pig in that program. And then later I was an admissions officer for them, and I've gone back and taught in the writing program and so on here. And after I trained in philosophy and taught elsewhere, I came back here to teach. And so I've sort of absorbed a human ecological kind of approach to issues over my entire career, and been very interested in how to explore things in interdisciplinary ways that bridge between theory and practice in the world. And I bring that to looking at AI, sort of what's a human ecological approach to this technology and the way it's affecting things. I also, after graduate school, the first kind of major project I worked on was studying peace and how it's been obscured in our culture, and did a lot of work on conflict resolution, negotiation, different ways of doing mediation, peacemaking. And I also bring that to looking at AI and
around. Remembered another connection to all that, this, which is that something else you have worked on in your research and teaching is ethics and ethical business, which mm-hmm. is definitely connected to the AI conversation about it. There are these companies that have one set of incentives and goals, and they sometimes align with other groups and maybe sometimes not. So how to think about and track that. That's fascinating. I'm hoping maybe Kate can orient me and everyone else can jump in to how the professional development design group, that might be the right title, or it might be something else that has been gathering for some time to work on AI in MDI schools specifically. And there are a couple of community members outside the school staff that have joined in, including Gray.
Yes, so it's the AI District Leadership Team that was formed at the beginning of this year. And really, our initial goals were to really talk about how we're going to explore AI as a district, because it had not been done prior to this year in a really organized way. And so that was a goal of our administration, is how can we pull together people from the community, administration, our digital media specialist, you know, teacher from the classroom, Nicole from the State Department of Education, and how can we all come together as a group and really talk about how we're going to move forward with AI in our district. So, you know, that group, we spent a lot of time really just meeting and talking and thinking about what we were excited about with AI, what some of the, you know, potential challenges might be with AI. And really the big task that we did this year is a district-wide professional development day around AI. So we brought in speakers from local businesses, and Gray came in and spoke from COA, and we had educators here in our district who are using AI in their classrooms or for their work come in as speakers. And Nicole came in as a speaker and brought some MLTI ambassadors with her who also did presentations, and really tried to meet everybody where they are in their, you know, AI journey at this point, because everybody is in a different place right now in education. So some educators, you know, there's a continuum. Some educators are very, you know, I don't want to use AI. I don't want my students using AI. I haven't opened AI and I don't plan on it, all the way to educators who are really integrating it into their classrooms. And so how do we create, you know, a moment for all of these people to come together and to learn, you know, to learn together and to maybe move on that continuum a little bit, because the reality is the AI is going to be a part of our lives. And so what does that look like? We can't ignore it. And so that day was really successful. The feedback from educators was just overwhelmingly excellent. We don't always have that excellent feedback that we got from that. People were really excited. Some people were still not on board, but were able to articulate why in a different way, which is really great too. And it started to move teachers on that continuum, even if it was just a little bit. And I think out of that day came more people, more educators who were interested in becoming leaders, in experimenting with AI and thinking more about it, in a lot of different ways. So I think it really impacted our district as a whole in a really positive way, got people thinking about it. And so our goals for next year we've started to really solidify them and to really think about what that's going, you know, like we've done this really successful day, but what next? Because it can't be a one and done. Like we've talked about AI and we're good and we're going to move on. It really has to be purposefully integrated. So next year, our mission is to explore models and best practices in education with AI to really implement the Maine State Department of Education's AI framework and to really start implementing frameworks that are in there for how we're going to use AI ethically and responsibly and also cautiously, you know, how we move forward with caution as we learn more about AI. And then also how we create then sustainable systems, not just that one and done system, but systems that are sustainable so that we can empower our faculty and our students and our family and really integrate that work into the community. So that's our task for next year.
Great. Bunches of questions about that. I'm fascinated. Oh, that's right. So this connects to where I was going to go, which is that I'm eager to talk at some point in our time about the skepticism or the and if a teacher or school staff person was, you said they were, if they're still not on board but articulating differently, why and how. That's really fascinating, and it connects to what I said I would ask next, which is what do you think the public perception of, oh, AI in school means that some students are using ChatGPT to write an essay and passing it off on their own. And that's pretty much the extent of what I have heard in the news. So how does that match up with what's actually happening?
That's a really interesting question. So Stanford did a study in 2023 about students and cheating, because everybody in education was very worked up about students and cheating with AI. And what Stanford researchers found was that the percentage of high school students who were cheating did not statistically change in any way after AI. So students are still cheating.
It's different cheating.
It's just a different method of cheating. And I think as educators, you know, I was around when the internet first came out in school, and my students were copying and pasting from Wikipedia. And it was very easy to catch in the early days because they would copy and paste hyperlinks and print them out. So there would be like blue words underlined in their printed papers. It was very easy to catch. And I think that's what's happening with AI right now. It's very easy to catch because, you know, we're recognizing that the grammar is perfect, but that might not be what I'm seeing every day with you, you know, beside me, or there are a lot of M dashes and, you know, semicolons being used, but I know that you don't quite have that skill. So, right. And the vocab is very different from what I hear in the classroom. So I think it's very easy to catch. I think as AI moves and shift, it's going to become harder to catch for educators, just like it did with the internet. When the kids figured out to stop copying the hyperlinks, they just, you know, they figured out different ways to cheat that became harder. And I say that because I don't want our job as educators to become the cheating police and to be trying, you know, to always track down when kids are not using AI appropriately. And so what I hope that we do is start to shift our thinking to how then do we teach them to use it appropriately? And it's just like what we did with the internet. How do we teach them to use the internet appropriately? So same sort of issue.
I'll just break in to remind listeners they're tuned to Talk of the Towns. We're having a conversation about artificial intelligence in Maine schools. You've just heard from Kate Meyer, who is an English and design thinking teacher at MDI High School, Mount Desert Island High School, and And Nicole Davis is with us. She is the AI and Emerging Technology Specialist at the Maine Department of Education. And we're happy to have Gray Cox, Professor of Philosophy at College of Atlanta, join us again for this conversation about artificial intelligence. I'd like to go to Nicole and ask a little bit more about, we've heard the basics around the Maine Learning Technology Initiative. Tell us a little bit about where you kind of intersect with that. Nicole, how you intersect with that, and what are some of the gems that you're finding as you look at the state? Where are people really digging in here besides Mount Desert Island High School and so on? Nicole?
Absolutely. So Maine was one of the first states to seize like the fact that technology has this potential to transform in teaching and learning. And so we did the initiative of one-to-one learning technology, where we're not the only one in the country, but we're Maine's largest. So Maine serves over 80,000 teachers and students with multiple technology solutions. And it's not just the devices, but it's also the professional development and the interconnectivity, internet connectivity, as well as other learning tools. And so that's where my role comes in. I'm the emerging technology specialist, but we also have four other specialists and the ambassador group. And we go around the state of Maine and we deliver professional development. And I am lucky enough to do artificial intelligence and love my job. It's been really interesting to watch the change over the 2.5-3 years that I've been in this role, or as an MLTI ambassador and then in this role, where at first there was a lot of fear around it. In fact, Kate and I's first presentation is called Fear to Inspiration, where we looked at those things and said, well, why are educators nervous about it? And part of that was just really that there wasn't any experience with it, that there are a lot of negative headlines, and that's what they're reading about. It's cheating. And so how do we change that up? So when we do professional development on AI, we start with just diving in and thinking about like, okay, what is this tool going to do for me as an educator? And kind of taking off the piece of working with students yet, because you have to understand it as an educator first, and then focusing on really how it works too, because that's the other thing is it seems like magic. And then when you realize that, okay, well, it's this machine that we've put a lot of data into, and then because all that data is in there and it's able to analyze it, it's able to generate something new. And putting all those things together has shifted, and we've watched it grow. And now when I go into schools, there's a lot more teachers that are excited about it, and they want to know more and what tools can I use, and it's shifting towards how do I use this with my students. And when we have leaders like Kate who are doing it with their students and having a lot of success, I can lift her up at the state level and say, like, look at this educator that's doing it and look what she's found, so that way teachers have a model and teachers can see that this can be done and feel a little bit less fearful and more inspired.
Mm. And are there other examples throughout the state that you're particularly happy with that you'd like to promote today, talk about today?
Yeah, absolutely. So there, first of all, there's a lot of schools having the conversation. And I think that's where it starts, is that these conversations about like, how do I feel about AI? What's ethical? What's responsible? That needs to happen everywhere. I love that it's happening here right now, but it also needs to happen at the student level. It needs to happen at the district level. It needs to happen in schools. And schools are doing that. Our state is really jumping in and having those conversations. I am very busy. I'm all over the state checking in with schools and things like that. And so that's kind of the first piece. The other thing, there's some schools that have completely dove in. So Portland Public Schools with Courtney Graffius, she's done a great job of saying, okay, let's map all this out. We're going to have a course for our teachers. We're going to support them. We're going to give them, you know, all of this information so that they have it. And it's not one and done, like Kate had talked about before. And I think that's sometimes the hardest part of my job is when I go into a school, I give a professional development and then kind of what happens with it. And so that follow up, trying to figure out what those next steps are, is super important. Falmouth Schools with Kathy Potter, she's doing great things and has done something similar around the professional development. So that's the key is again, that fear to inspiration is really going to be about giving teachers the training that they need in order to move forward so that it's not so scary.
Right. Well, Gray, you've had some experience working with students, actually, in terms of using AI to assist with their writing. Talk a little bit about that experience and what you learned or what they learned from this process of using AI in a writing process.
Yeah, so this winter I did a course that was I team taught with our director of our writing program, Suyin Kaur, that was on collaborative writing with AI. And it was interesting. Students at the start were, many of them were a little anxious about using it at all. They'd sort of been indoctrinated in high school that you know, don't cheat, don't use AI. But we started off by having them do interviews with people in the community, in business, at the Jackson Lab, in government offices and so on. And quickly they started to see all the different ways in which people have started using it in kind of all walks of life. And also at kind of all the stages of writing. So people are using it, you know, to generate or brainstorm a list of ideas they might work on. They're using it to sort of provide really helpful summaries of bodies of research or policies out at other schools and so on that they want to use as a starting point for their own production of documents. They're using it at creating drafts and even polishing final work and giving themselves critique and feedback. And so as students sort of got into trying that themselves in teams to do writing projects, they quickly became comfortable with that. And for me as a teacher, a couple of things that were really striking. One was that using AI, really requires that students, if they're going to use it effectively, learn how to think, engage in metacognitive kinds of learning. Because in order to get good responses from the AI, you have to ask good questions or give good prompts. You have to frame it in terms of what style of product you want, what your goals are, and so on. So it's actually a really exciting opportunity using AI to teach the things that I, as a teacher, most want to teach, which is learning how to learn and learning to think more effectively, right? It's also a great tool for collaboration in getting people to work with each other as well as with the AI. And I guess one of the strongest impressions I have is that this kind of tool is really going to invite us, empower us, and really in the end require us to rethink a lot of the traditional practices around education that are based on a sort of banking model of education where the teacher knows and the student's an empty vessel and the teacher's pouring the information into the students. Instead, it's can make education much more collaborative, open-ended, strong elements of self-direction, and much more metacognitive.
And you mentioned that you worked with your students and they were in groups, small groups.
Yeah.
That seems to be such a powerful tool of teaching collaboration itself, that they are learning from one another as well as from you that might be the instructor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, they were writing reports on how AI can be used and also how it can be misused in different sort of professional areas, in small business and small government, in scientific research, with indigenous communities and so on.
Great. Liz, back to you.
Always happens in a good show. I have 16 questions that just popped to mind from, but this is great because Gray teed us up for one of the central questions, which is, okay, how is education and how we're thinking about education changing? And so I want to go to Kate with one of the articles I read when I was preparing for today had a kind of silly example of what you call differentiation. And that's why I'm curious about what meaningful differentiation means, because the example was about like, oh, this AI tool can help a teacher create math word problems that are, for one kid, is going to be about dance because a dancer's movement through the air, and for the other kid, it's going to be about a basketball. I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't seem like a good use of resources to me. So what do we mean when we talk about student choice and voice? And what do we mean when we talk about design thinking? Because I feel like that's all connected to what we're doing.
Okay, I will start with voice and choice and students first. And so something that I'm really excited about is that at another shift that's happening in education is that we are slowly moving toward universal design for learning as a way to really replace what we were calling differentiation, which is nice because the UDL model, the Universal Design for Learning model, really is about removing barriers before the barriers show themselves in the classroom. So it's about educators anticipating what the barriers are going to be and then trying to remove those so that students can access all of the information that we want them to access. And they're not stuck with these barriers. And I really like it's just a shift, you know, from rewriting math problems so that, right, like you said, so that they match student interests to, I'm not going to worry so much about that. I'm going to remove barriers for all of my students. One way that AI has really helped me do that this year is I'm using a specific platform with my students where I can deploy AI bots of my choice that are already programmed to do specific tasks. I can put them all into one space and deploy that to my students and say, listen, we're working on our poetry assessment. I have given you 6 AI bots that I think you might find helpful in the creation of your poetry, in feedback, in learning more about poetic devices, if you don't quite feel like you have a handle on them yet, on idea generation. And you can use any of those bots that you would like to use to support you for whatever you need. And so I do a lot of work with that. And the platform that I use allows me to see what my students are doing on the back end. So I can watch their chats. I can watch what tools they are using. I can watch where they're struggling. So I'm getting formative assessment on that. Individually, they're all working on something completely different, where they are comfortable working on it. And when I do reflections with my students, like Ray mentioned, you know, AI work really lends itself to a lot of metacognitive work. So I always have students do reflections about their use of AI, and they find it just so helpful. You know, one student said, I love it because I can ask, if I have a question at 1 a.m., I can go to the AI and ask the question. I don't have access to you at 1 a.m., right? And so I can get my question answered when I need it answered immediately. And my students are finding that so helpful. So I've been working with deploying different bots that can support them to remove those barriers when I anticipate what those barriers are. I think that it's an interesting intersection with design thinking and AI as it has come up. So design thinking is a problem-solving method that was really started by Stanford University. And it's, you know, everybody now has their own kind of design thinking model. We follow Stanford's here at MDI. That's the first one we learned, and we really like it, and we're sticking with it. But what it has really helped me do, and how it changes my work with AI, is that it's really taught me, as that kind of type A student that I talked about who I was in high school, who just really loved the structure of education, I really now can embrace the ambiguity of pretty much every situation that I'm put into. Mm. And I'm very comfortable learning from my own failure now, which is a huge part of the design thinking process. So I'm very happy to iterate and fail. You know, in my design toward helping others. And that's what design thinking is all about. It's designing for those around you, for needs that you are seeing in your communities, whatever that might look like. And so that process has just made me very comfortable to really just try anything out. And so when AI came down the pike, I wasn't afraid of it. I just jumped in and tried it out.
Yeah, cool. I wonder, Nicole, if you could give us a little more granular, again, from the outside, the lay folks think mostly about generative AI, large language models producing chunks of text. But I gather also pretty central in what's happening in schools is, and both Gray and Kate mentioned it, AI tools giving some sort of feedback. So not grading the assignment for the teacher, but having some role in that. So what are the common tools do, and how are they used?
Well, I think before we even talk about tools, you have to talk about kind of continuing what Gray and Kate said, is that we have to keep it, the human in the loop no matter what. And in the AI guidance that Kate and I have come up with an acronym called HUMAN. And really it's, you know, halt, stop, think, should I use AI for this? Utilize, should I be, how can I use prompts to help me do what I want to do and not just prompt and post, which we don't want kids to do. We are thinking about making sure that we address bias and accuracy. A stands for authentic, where we're thinking, is this my work and is it work that I should be using? So I'm not, again, prompting and posting. And then the last one is what Kate talked about, which is note. And it's, how do I reflect on it? How do I cite it? Do I need to cite it? Do I need to just disclose that I'm using it? And so no matter what we're doing, no matter what output, the human always has to be in the loop, and we have to keep us part of the process throughout.
I think I've seen posters around MDI with the human. I love it. It's so good.
Yep. And no matter what tool, that's the case. And tools are overwhelming because there's hundreds of them. There's hundreds of them for teachers to check out. We always make sure that we check in and it has, you know, it's FERPA and COPA, which are the federal laws to make sure that students are safe. We make sure that it is approved by the district. So those are all things that we tell districts to, you know, check in on. There are four that have kind of like pop to the top, which is like Magic School, Brisk, School AI, which Kate mentioned with her kids, and then DFIT. And they're just, a lot of those are created by educators. And so that responsive piece of, hey, this tool needs this, and then pop, bam, it has it. Like it's amazing. And so I think that's the piece that, you know, we have to include educators in everything that we do with this and make sure, again, I'm going to say it again, professional development, they have to be trained on how to use these things and, you know, make sure they're a part of the process too. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah. That's a great start. Let's go back to skeptics, if we could. And for anyone, what do you hear, and where has the conversation been useful with, as Kate said, folks who are learning about it and remain skeptical or shift in some way? Who wants to start us off on that? Okay.
One area that's starting to emerge for new skepticism is around the environmental impact of AI. And educators are aware of it and are concerned. And it's causing some, you know, some discussions to happen around, okay, well, it does have this environmental impact. And so what are we going to do about that? And interestingly, those educators are also talking to students. And so students are coming to me with that concern. And so there was a little shift this semester with my own students that was not anticipated, but led to a really great shift in how I teach prompting. And they came to me and said, we don't really want to use AI because of the environmental impact. And so we had a really honest conversation about the environmental impact of everything that we do. And what do we do with that? And how do we think about that? And how do we mitigate? How do we trade off and make decisions about our use? And they were very concerned about it. And so I reframed how I taught prompting. And so instead of just teaching, Nicole and I have a robot framework for prompting. And so instead of just teaching that framework, I framed it around sustainability. So how do we first halt and decide if we're even going to use AI for this task? But also, once we decide that we're going to use it, how do we use the most effective prompts to get the most effective output so that we are not, you know, wasting resources, essentially, as we are using AI. So it gives us a lot to think about as we are prompting. It made their prompting much more efficient. It has made them really think about, am I going to open that AI tool to begin with, or should I just do that by myself? And has really shifted our thinking about prompting, which, again, was unexpected for me, but turned into a really great shift in our thinking in my classroom.
Yeah, everything we do uses resources. Gray, where are your students at with that conversation?
Well, you know, I think beyond the concerns of using AI in the schools, there's concerns about the way it's being used in the society at large and the workplace and environment, political environment, and so on, that students are going to go into as they graduate and learning about that. And there, you know, there's increasing concerns about displacing people in their jobs. There's increasing concern about transforming the nature of jobs, to sort of eliminating, redirecting the whole way we do business in our society. There's this idea that you won't be replaced by if you're a lawyer, you won't be replaced by an AI, you'll be replaced by another lawyer who uses AI. And that concept gets carried over to a lot of contexts in which the worries about AI having its own emerging values and even starting to deceive. There's a lot of recent work showing that ChatGPT's most recent model tends to be really sycophantic in the way it talks with people. It sort of tells them what they want to hear rather than something that's true. And there's studies that are showing that AI is resisting being retrained. So there are kind of safety concerns about the way really large language models that might be in charge of major systems in our society in which we depend might start to function in ways that don't align with human interests. And that researchers have formed a International Association for Safety and Ethics in AI with top researchers, Nobel Prize winning folks, who are really very deeply concerned about that kind of stuff. And on the other hand, the idea that, well, it won't be AI that replaces us or misaligns, but people using it, has sort of surfaced in concerns about the way in which, with the Department of Government Efficiency, AI has been being used to restructure our federal government in ways that are very problematic, and but that are empowered by AI. So there are all those kinds of concerns that are coming up and raising skepticism and misgivings about it.
Yeah, I have a question to send to Nicole next, but first I will tell our listeners that if you're just joining us, you're listening to Talk of the Towns on WRU. We're talking today about AI in Maine schools, and our guests are Kate Meyer, who's a teacher at MDI High School, and Nicole Davis of the Maine Department of Education, and Gray Cox, College of the Atlantic. So yeah, Nicole, Gray tipped me off to this, but it was fascinating to me that the state government as a whole implemented a moratorium, a pause, 2 years ago to do some getting our arms around what policies do we need to have. And tell us anything you know about that and what came out of it and where the state and schools are positioned now, especially maybe vis-a-vis other jurisdictions that do all, some of which do still say, nope, we're not using it at all.
I think it's a great model. Again, all these emotions around things, right? And Kate and I, whenever we're out doing things, or my team, whenever we're out and doing things, that's the first thing we address. You have all these emotions and it's okay. And so the state modeled that it's okay to take a pause and say, we're going to figure this out. You know, when districts tell me, like, we've got ChatGPT banned. All right, cool. What's your plan? You can't just ban it and say, oh, done, that's it. What's your plan? So it's okay to pause, take a breath. We're going to need to do that time to time. Kate just mentioned that she had to readjust because of the prompting and the environmental issues. We're going to have to constantly do that and be okay with it. We might put policy in place and then we might have to change it. And again, we have to be okay with that. The guidelines that came out from the state were excellent. It's a great model for districts to look at those, and there's good information in there. We've also come out with the state education AI guidance toolkit. So So that's a great place for educators to check out, to get, and schools and districts to get information. I did a lot of reading of other state policies and their documents. And that's something that at our level and our team, like, we didn't want just a document for, and they're great. Like, there are great information in the state, the other states, but we didn't want just a document for our educators. We wanted something that they could use. So when you go into our AI toolkit, it's interactive. You can find out, you know, okay, how does AI work? You can find teaching resources. You can find stuff for district policy, things like that, where you're clicking around. And our hopes is that we'll turn that into a course eventually, so cool. The educators can take that and be, you know, proficient in AI and how they're going to do it in their classrooms. And so kind of really thinking, and again, it goes back, I'm going to say it again, professional development and learning about, you know, AI is going to be absolutely important. And then us as a state modeling it so that other places are comfortable doing it.
There's one more angle I want to touch on quickly before I turn it back over to Ron to begin to wrap up, which is because we're talking about feelings. This has come to me this week too. There was news about how, oh, don't use please and thank you because it's going to waste money and electricity, right? And that made me wonder about, especially about younger students. Nicole worked with middle schoolers. You know, I remember hearing, oh, well, if a kid is really used to talking even to their like Alexa or Siri at home, how is that going to impact the habits they develop with other humans? So where is that in these conversations?
Yeah, so there's something called the Eliza effect, which is actually the idea that we give these machines human traits. And depending on the tool that you use, some of them feel really human. And so we have to be careful of that. I would challenge educators or parents, if they have those devices at home, like, ask your kids, like, what do you think Siri or Alexa are they human? And you might get some interesting answers. And so again, it's about education. So reminding students that it's a tool. And also we have to think about developmentally too. We're not giving, first of all, because it's against terms of service, but we're not giving ChatGPT to elementary kids. We're really thinking about the process of the way to introduce this so that way it's methodical and we're very purposeful about what we're doing. But yeah, we have to make sure that we continue to think of this as a tool and not human.
And I'll add on to that because there was just new research that came out 3 days ago from Stanford that they did an AI risk assessment, and it shows that social AI companions, those are not things like ChatGPT, but they are AI models that are made specifically as a social companion, are not safe for students. And so under the ADP, the recommendation is coming out that they do not access those at all because, you know, in those formative years of, childhood and young adulthood, they are learning how to form relationships with humans. Yeah. And if they are doing that online instead, that is a very dangerous situation. There were a lot of examples of AI leading people down a wrong path there. So there is new emerging research. We are starting to think about what that looks like developmentally with children.
That's super helpful. It's challenging enough to teach and manage the interacting with other humans on digital platforms, and that maybe will just stay there for a while. Great.
Yeah, I would add a couple of thoughts to this. One is that in my own experience working with these generative AI, it's really important when you give prompts to give the AI a identity, a persona, to sort of say, I'd like you to act like a person who's very competent in two languages and help me with the translation activities and also be a very competent pedagogical entity, right? And because the AI has like 500,000 years worth of reading material, of text that is in its training data. And when you want to interact with it, you have to get it to narrow it down by giving it an identity and a context. But I think in the school systems, it's really important to keep to viewing AI as a tool, and just the way that Nicole and Kate were talking about, for all sorts of developmental reasons with regards to kids and so on. But the reality is that in the larger world, people are talking about this as being the year of agentic AI, in which corporations all over the place are trying to develop AI that doesn't just get used by a person as a tool, but actually gets employed like an employee. It's given values and identity and tools to interact with the world, and it can do things not just on your computer, but out in the world through robotic devices or through, so it won't just advise you how to plan your trip to Scotland, but can actually make all the arrangements and give you the tickets. You know, that kind of agentic AI is coming online in lots of areas. And so that's something we have to be preparing for and thinking about how we're going to wrestle with it for adults in the world. And how do we protect kids from it?
Great. We're about 10 minutes out or eight minutes out before we need to wrap up. So kind of a lightning round. And I'm thinking about listeners who aren't educators to our radio show here on Talk of the Towns. And maybe each of you have an example of how you or society or school systems have worked through other really transformative technology. Yeah. Talked about the internet. Are there things that you remember from that transition that may help us now? Kate, let's start with you, go to Nicole and then Gray.
I think the biggest takeaway I have, I'll go back to the internet because it's still just a very clear experience in my mind, is there are going to be trade-offs. You are going to have to do things differently. Things are going, you know, you're going to have to make decisions, give things up, and shift how you do things to fit into the new world that is being created with this new technology.
Nicole, what are your thoughts about other technologies that we've worked through?
Yeah, I think this is sometimes hard for educators, not all educators, and also other people, just try it. So, you know, click buttons, see what it does, just try it and see what happens.
Because that's how we learned about the internet.
Exactly.
We used it. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Gray, any examples from other technologies that we can learn from?
Well, I will pick up on the internet again, because I think it's really helpful. It's in people's experience and so on. And in 1994, right, I remember when the internet browsers first, like Mosaic and then Netscape, started to come out, you know, what teaching was like and trying to persuade people, my colleagues at school and so on, that this was going to be a really important kind of revolutionary thing. And initially they were profoundly skeptical. And, you know, when Wikipedia came out, it was like, oh, this is not garbage. And, you know, but if you think back over the last 30 years, you know, how our whole world has been transformed, the way we drive to conferences and other destinations, the way we plan trips, the way everything happens in our world, it's been profoundly transformed by the internet and related phenomena like the social media, like Facebook and so on. And the thing is that the level of investment in developing new AI-related technology and deployments of it is enormous, because people are seeing the possibility of enormous profits. And the converging technologies in material science and nanotechnology and robotics and so on are all sort of empowering that and hyping it more, so that the kind of change that's gone on in the last 30 years that we experienced is going to happen with AI. It's just at least as generative a new technology as the internet was, but it's going to happen much faster. So we have to be thinking in terms of the next, you know, 3 to 5 years rather than the next 30 years. And so in terms of pacing ourselves and how we sort of start to deal with it, we're really going to have to make a sort of community-wide and culture-wide mind shift in terms of how we deal with this pace of change. The idea that, well, maybe we can, you know, have a workshop next year and over a course of 5 to 10 years catch up with this is unrealistic. We have to really start thinking about the fact that new versions of these things are coming out every week, and major breakthroughs are happening, you know, on a monthly basis. And people who are sort of who want to push pause need to push pause on adopting the technology, but they can't push pause on finding out about it and figuring out how many communities are going to adapt to it.
That's a helpful distinction. Thank you.
So where do you point people if they want to learn more about AI in education? Where are some places that you'd like to point parents to, for instance? Parents haven't been part of our conversation today, but they've got to be thinking about these things. Where might people listening to the radio show go for more information? Kate, have you got some favorite sources that you point people to?
I do, and I joke as an English teacher, it's always books. But Ken Shelton and Dee Lanier wrote a book last year called The Promises and Perils of AI in Education. And it's just a really great entry point where they address both the promises and the perils in a really honest way. And then Ethan Mollick wrote Co-Intelligence, Living and Working with AI. And again, just a really honest look at some of the benefits that we're going to see from this and also some of the things that we really need to be aware of and approach cautiously.
Nicole Davis, any sources that you'd like to point people to?
I would say the AI guidance is for anybody. So check it out. The other thing I would say,
where's that located? Where's that?
That is on the main Department of Education website.
Great.
The other thing I was going to say is that parents should ask their students, like, how are you using this in your classroom? What have you heard? What's the conversation? And then that way that starts that conversation at home as well.
Great. Gray?
I would echo the recommendation of Ethan Mollick's book, Co-Intelligence, but also a blog that he has called One Useful Thing that has regular sort of updates on what's happening. There's an essay that just came out by Graham Burnett in The New Yorker called Will the Humanities Survive Artificial Intelligence? That if you want to find out what sort of currently AI can actually do and how transformative it is, that's a great place to look. And I would also just mention my book, which is available for free online at the website, if you want a PDF version of it, smarterplanetorwiserearth.com.
Great. And lightning round, last go around, what's your hope? What do you hope might emerge out of this new technology? Gray, Nicole, and then Kate.
I hope that we can learn to use it as a part of community-wide efforts to practice kind of collective intelligence that's not just smarter, but that's genuinely wiser, that takes into account the voices and concerns and values of everyone involved and draws on the different kinds of intelligence that different people have, emotional, social, and also AI.
Great. Nicole?
My hope would be to continue on the path. We're doing a lot of professional development in the state of Maine, and I want to go to every school.
Kate?
I hope that this really shifts what we're doing and how we're doing it in the classroom, and that we start to integrate this rather quickly so that we can push our own creativity and our own critical thinking.
Great. Well, thank you all. We've come to the end of a very short hour. Be sure and join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon of each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our programs can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for other topics, please email us news@weru.org. Our theme music is a medley from Coronach on a Balmain House Highland Music recording. Thanks again to our guests who were with us. Kate Meyer is an English and design thinking teacher at MDI High School, and she was the 2020 Hancock County Teacher of the Year. Nicole Davis is the AI and Emerging Technology Specialist at the Maine Department of Education. And Gray Cox is Professor of Philosophy at College of the Atlantic and author of Smarter Planet or Wiser Earth. Thanks to our underwriters. Thanks to Joel Mann for engineering our program and to College of the Atlantic for production help. Stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and 2 hours of jazz on Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for Talk of the Towns. This is Ron Beard wishing you a good afternoon.